We have the Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired Board is in order.
Oh, Fritz is here. I'm sorry.
Okay, Fritz is here.
Pass it down to Dorothy.
We want to welcome everybody. It sounds like people are still arriving, but we're going to go ahead and begin. I will, first of all, read the agenda, and then if there is anything that people need to add to it or anything, we can deal with that.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
I don't think I got an agenda for whatever reason.
Well, maybe that was yours, I was saying.
No.
Nancy needs an agenda. Somebody could get her one, that'd be good.
Coming right up.
Okay.
Seemed to be a pain today.
So far, the agenda is the call to order and introductions, announcement concerning public comments and tapes of meetings, lunch arrangements and other logistics, minutes of the August 13th meeting, focus topic, unserved and underserved populations, public comment, report from the chairman, public comment, break, report from the executive director, public comment, old business, budget update, website update, status of rehab update, friends of the commission update, NIS update with potential job opportunity, newsline update, status of taped public meeting educational materials, new commissioner's packet update, status of Braille on vending machines, public comment, break for lunch, new business, status of Randolph Shepherd, focus topic for next two meetings, public comment, announcement of date and location of February 2006 meeting, and adjourn. So that is the agenda. If anyone has anything to add to it.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
This is Wes Pedras here. I just wanted to say if you guys wanted, a status report on how NIS testing's going, I can provide such. Just let me know.
Okay, that can happen in the NIS update.
Yeah, I can. I just wanted to make you aware of those.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll begin then with introductions. I'm Barbara Loos, Chairman of the Board of Commissioners, and we can start with you, Dorothy.
I'm Dorothy Weston-Niaki from South Sioux City.
Bill Arrester from Lincoln, of course.
Nancy Altman from Hastings.
Bob Burns from Omaha.
Pearl Van Zandt, Lincoln.
Hubert Paulson, Lincoln.
Val Peary, Lincoln.
I know you're out there, okay. People.
Bob Deaton, Lincoln.
Peggy Sandberg, Lincoln.
Chris Yockey, South Sioux.
Ryan Osentoski, Lincoln.
Wes Medeiros, Lincoln.
Brad Love, Lincoln.
Patoche Floyd, Lincoln.
Kathy Brown, Omaha.
That appears to be it.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for coming.
Would tell Bill, he said, Lincoln, of course.
Okay, and as you notice, there are several periods for public comment. We, a while back, revised our way of doing things so that there are times for public comment after most items on the agenda, and so that would be the time for people to be able to talk about not only whatever the topic that was currently discussed was, but anything else that might be something that you want for us to either know about or do something about or you know, whatever. Let's see, are there any lunch arrangement or logistical comments?
This is Pearl. The youth, they call it the Kids Home Teaching Group here in Lincoln, is having a session today, and among other things, they are doing some cooking, and they will be providing us with the lunch. So at whatever time they come over is when we'll want to break for lunch. We didn't talk about a specific time, just noonish, and they'll be bringing us home.
Okay. And we can try to work around that schedule. Okay, excuse me?
Should we make a comment about the timeframes and the beeping? So we know how we're managing that?
Okay.
That's logistics.
Yes, the agenda does have times listed on it. We will stay as close to those as we can. The timeframes, we will try to adhere to. For instance, the item having to do with minutes has a 9:15 to 9:20 timeframe. If we get slightly off due to things like lunch and things like that, we will still try to adhere to the time frame. And we do have a time person. And we have the thing that beeps lets us know that we're ready for the next item. So that's what that is.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is the minutes of the August 13, 2005 meeting.
If there are no changes or corrections, I would move their adoption.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we adopt the minutes, that is, that we move them from draft to approved status. Is there any discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The next item on the agenda is the focus topic, which is unserved and underserved populations. And I want to thank Bob Deaton for sending material to us ahead of time on this subject. We received a report and some statistics concerning that. And we do appreciate receiving that material. And so, Pearl?
Yes, ma'am. All right. The whole area of addressing gaps in the service provision is something that we're always attentive to, and in fact, always have been. When I first started in 79, there were very few services to older blind persons, and Dr. Nyman hired me to be a special needs counselor specifically to work with older blind and people who also had mental retardation. I don't think we used as the fancy terms back then, but mental retardation was kind of the main over umbrella for people with developmental disabilities of various types. Always this agency has worked to address those needs. Of course, we're also aware we don't, you know, meet everyone's needs. We don't serve all the people who could benefit. Sometimes it's because they choose not to. Other times it's because of our limited resources. But we're certainly aware of this and want to make sure that we don't sort of accidentally leave out a particular target group, whether it's geographic area or racial or ethnic groups or age groups is another kind of area, and then people with multiple disabilities and people with multiple disabilities of varying kinds. And so I would say that making sure that if there are people who use the guide dogs, that we make sure they know we can provide the kinds of services that they need in addition to their mobility that they have with the dog. So it's kind of a broad scope, and it, rather than having one person present, the reason I put it under my name is because it touches, the topic touches about everybody that works for the agency statewide. So various supervisors and administrators sent information put into the report that you all received, and then Bob wrote that up into a coherent document, and I appreciate your work on that, Bob. We got some of the demographics of the statistics from Dottie Wilmot, some from Fatosh Floyd, and some from just the statistics that Bob and I had gathered and put together. So that's kind of the overview. I'd be glad to discuss or answer any questions or discuss other pieces of it. Bob, with his focus on supported employment, deaf blindness, and independent living, his job probably more than others addresses this topic. So we might call on him as well with some of the things you want to discuss. And I might mention that Carlos Cervan just came in a few minutes ago.
Welcome.
So he may have something to add as well. Did you have any questions or comments?
Well, one thing that I'm wondering about is how we, you know, I know that we do have people sometimes approach the commission, but I know that a long time ago anyway, some populations were less inclined to just kind of come. You know, there were, for instance, some Native Americans who I think were, I don't know, more comfortable if somebody came to where they were rather than coming someplace else. And I don't know if that's still how it is, but what does the commission staff do to reach out to people who are in, you know, close-knit communities and, you know, who may not really feel comfortable coming and doing it that way?
Right, that's a very good point that kind of permeates much of this topic. And it's partly because the proportion of people, especially Native American, is very small in Nebraska. However, that group has a higher rate of especially diabetes. And so we do a number of things statewide. In the North Platte District, Candy Larson and others of her staff, but probably mostly Candy, do go to the reservations. I don't know if it's on a regular basis, but they do reach out to those populations and, number one, making sure they know we're here, and number two, letting them know they don't have to come to some state office building in North Platte, that we can go to them. Of course, all of this is right now within the constraints of fewer cars and fewer staff, but that generally that's how we approach it. John Schmidt in the Norfolk office does definitely do pretty regular work in the reservations in his area, and some of the committees and panels that Carlos and others of our staff sit on work to get outreach to Hispanics and Latinos, and we've done a few things to try to outreach to the Asian American population, but that has, I think that is sort of the newest struggle, very protective population, and actually probably even more, this is my idea, I don't know if this is true, possibly even more language barriers for some folks, especially elderly individuals. So those are the things off the top of my head. Bob or Carlos, do you have any other thoughts about how we reach those?
I have some thoughts in some different areas. As far as the interpreters go, you know, another factor that I've been frustrated with, particularly when I was in the field, is is the level of competency as far as the interpreters that are employed. Catholic Social Services in particular has been a resource for people with from Asian countries. And I think what happens there is I often find myself saying to the interpreter, could you please interpret that for the individual? You know, sometimes I feel like I'm talking to the interpreter and the information is not being translated, you know. And so it's been a frustration. You say that enough times and you wonder what the person thinks he's there for, you know. And I've been frustrated with that on numerous occasions when that happens. But otherwise, we do make a concerted effort to find interpreters that we can rely on. And perhaps now, generally, I've also found myself using resources again and again if I like it, you know. I remember before she left Nebraska and came back, I used Anna Kalin, for example, as an interpreter. And she was quite effective as far as working with people with in the Hispanic community. In more recent years, Carlos has done a lot of support, assisting counselors working with people who speak Spanish, but perhaps not English so well. So there's just a couple of thoughts there as far as interpreters go. As far as other populations that we've had problems with, I think some of that goes with the overall service delivery system and not just the commission as an agency. Many of the individuals that are not being served well is because they require services that involve a spectrum of agencies, such as people with developmental disabilities. There it's not quite so bad because there is an ongoing source of support after 18 months, which is the limitation placed on how long we can serve people, particularly with supported employment, using supported employment money. But there is no ongoing source of funding for people past 18 months if they have a disability that occurs after the age of 21, or if they have specific types of disabilities such as traumatic brain injury, you know, after the age of 21, or mental illness. I think Nebraska has a long ways to go to as far as providing an adequate service support system for people with specific kinds of disabilities. We have tried to bring in presenters at the local and state level to talk to us about the service needs of individuals with certain types of disabilities. But it's been a difficult struggle as far as providing what our counselors need in that area. So it's very much a one-on-one type of involvement that we have. You know, we just have to take one piece at a time. And that means it's much, much more time, labor intensive too. We're not serving this population well. At the same time, they do involve a lot of our time and attention. So I just want to say that. If sometimes it's not a satisfactory outcome, it's not because we're not trying or putting our best effort forward. You know? So sometimes it's just that the overall system is failing too. Those are my immediate thoughts.
Thank you, Bob. Another thing I'd like to point out is that people who are deaf and blind, I'm sure you know, if they've been deaf and are losing sight now, they've been part of the deaf community. And often they're, you know, less and less accepted by their peers and they feel less comfortable there. And they certainly don't want to be blind. You know, that's always, most deaf people believe the worst thing that can happen to you is blindness. And then at the same time, if somebody's been blind and now they're losing their hearing, that causes a lot of barriers as well. So the deaf blindness project that we've had for 5 years has been a real help. Cheryl Poff in Omaha has done a tremendous job to educate our staff, reach out to the deafblind population that otherwise might not have come to us, and setting up a service system that we can at least begin to address those needs. And everybody's done a great job with that. Lincoln District and the center staff have worked to learn some sign language. Some other staff have learned that, and so that's one example of where we've just taken a real strong approach to meet that need because we saw the gap.
I have a question on the mental and learning disability side. Our counselors, I guess, are trained in, you know, rehabilitation for the blind, but you know, especially kind of popped out at me the going through the center, the statistics of, you know, significant percentage of people with some learning and mental issues. Are counselors, some of them becoming kind of cross-trained in that discipline, or are they working with other, you know, mental and learning disability organizations that, you know, and how that cooperation works? I guess just had some, you know, questions on that.
Sure.
General front.
Okay. Training is the population of people who either are learning disabled, developmentally disabled, and then getting into the mental illness, mental health issues. We've had speakers at every district every district has had speakers from time to time to address those issues. Of course, what you touch on there is quite often the people in that service system, whichever it happens to be, don't know anything about blindness. So we connect with the other professionals in the field. Our local staff are really very good at knowing the other agencies, the other service providers in their particular area, and getting the word out to them, kind of working in a joint effort on the one-on-one, in a one-on-one manner. And we also have had training at state staff meetings as well as at office and district meetings by, it's usually a person from another, one of those other entities in that local area that comes and speaks to our staff. Others have gone to training sessions for various things, multiple disabilities, mental illness, a variety of things. And so we do work at that. I think one of the difficulties, especially with, let's say, specific mental illness, or traumatic brain injury is another thing we haven't mentioned by name yet today. We'll have training. We've had some very excellent training. And then it may be a while before a particular counselor who attended that has a client that has that condition. And so I'm sure you know when you learn anything, if you don't need to use it right away, sometimes it's difficult. So that's a challenge. We'll have less funds for training in the next 5 years than we have had. However, most of the training I'm talking about right now, we don't have to pay for. The local supervisor or a counselor will connect with that person from another agency or organization and then bring them in, and you know, there's no cost for that. So we really like to use those local resources, and they're the ones we'll have to work with when we have referrals. So another thing kind of related to this is, you know, we've talked for years about the lack of referrals, or the lack of referrals from the eye care specialists. And that's been something we've done different things through the years. We at one point did a letter about who we are and what we do to all of the eye care, all of the ophthalmologists in the state. I think it also went to all the optometrists in the state. And recently, we had two counselors, Angie Hoff from Scotts Bluff and Jean Wertz from Kearney, have a booth at and attend the Nebraska Optometric Association conference, which was in Kearney. And that was a really excellent opportunity. I bring that in this context because we think that an underserved population are people who their only knowledge about vision loss or blindness is from their eye doctor or their optometrist. And if that person doesn't believe in rehab or doesn't know about us or both, they're never going to get the referral. And so that's where we really try to communicate with those folks, let them know we're not the enemy, and we really, a referral to us is not a failure on their end. We can work together with people. So that's another thing we did recently.
Pearl, this is Dorothy.
Yes.
How do you deal with substance abuse?
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Oh, were you going to make an?
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
Okay. We, again, have good working relationships with the substance abuse service providers in various areas. On a one-on-one basis, sometimes we make it clear, really, in all of these extra cases, we're not the expert on that particular problem. But what we can do is, we know the kinds of resources that help. We can connect an individual with those. Sometimes we kind of support that and encourage the person to get involved with some kind of drug or alcohol abuse program. While we're, you know, working counseling with the person about blindness, sometimes there's a point where it's clear that they just need to get their substance abuse handled. Mm-hmm. And we need to not provide our services until they do that. Mm-hmm. But I don't want you to get the idea that we are, you know, we don't quickly figure that out and say, no, you can't come here till you, you know, it's very individualized and determined by what that person is willing to do, is, you know, gonna really make a commitment to, you know, change in their own life.
Mm-hmm. Do we, you know, in determining all this information, you know, this learning disability and all the mental illness, all those things, initially, is there a fact find? I mean, do they have to release medical records? I mean, how much do we require to know, and how much do we just depend on them to volunteer to us?
Carlos, why don't you?
Yeah, we can require all the medical information or psychiatric information they are supposed to give to us in order for us to provide better services. And that's also in the IP rights and responsibilities when they sign that. So I think that answers your question very well.
Okay.
I can get more into it if you want to.
No, it just occurred to me that if, you know, especially like learning disability, I mean, if, you know, that the schools may be, you know, fully aware of it, but if they don't really tell us, then you really can't. If they do have something like that, you really need to know, because it's going to impact how you serve them. I assume then in the fact find we ask a number of questions. Do you have this or that? But do we routinely get other records? Because I know that a lot of times people just don't tell us things, and if we don't routinely get their records, then do we only get records if we suspect something, or do we routinely get records?
We routinely get the records because that's part of the everyday job, especially when we take a new case. However, there are some situations in which clients or applicants are very good on hiding their situation. And as the process goes, we start recognizing those and we counsel with them to start getting evaluations and so on. So not in all cases we are able to identify the type of secondary disability that they have, but eventually we do. Mainly it's because many times they are hiding it or they don't want us to know. But in general, that's part of the application form, and so we ask for any other disabilities, we ask for the signatures in order for us to get their release and different doctor's report.
Thank you, Pearl. Another point about that, you mentioned when someone leaves school, with the new transition or the new IDEA, Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act, there are very strong requirements about education and rehab working together for transition services. And I know you've had presentations about our transition many times, but one of the new things with the regulations for IDEA is a requirement for a summary of performance document to be given to the young or to the high school graduate or to any individual when they leave high school. And I'm on a team with some key people in education and some other disciplines that are working on what we're going to use for that. We have come up with a tool that really is, it's basically a two-page summary of performance, and it gets at what are there other issues like, you know, substance abuse or something or other disabilities, anything that might be in there. Strengths of the person, barriers to, challenges, things that need to be addressed. And I think it'll be a really good tool. The school, together with the IEP, Individualized Education Plan, developed this and this summary of performance. Our staff often attend the IEP meetings, and if we don't, we communicate with the individuals. I'm sure there's some youngsters that we don't know about. But even if they're, for those people, if the summary of performance does the job it's supposed to do, then let's say a little later when they get referred to us or come to us for some services, then that document can help us know, in a nutshell, a lot of information about the person and what their school, kind of where they were at the end of their schooling.
Mm-hmm. Is there any money from any other sources for to pay interpreters, or does it just strictly come out of our budget?
It comes out of our budget as a case service cost. There really is no funding for that.
Like Bob Deed mentioned, the Catholic Services, I think, do they charge?
No.
Yeah, I should say, there are other resources that we try to connect with and work with.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that specific. But when there's a need for hiring one, that comes out of our budget.
All right.
If I may.
Please.
Catholic Social Services were the primary provider for people who speak Vietnamese. Not a resource that I use to be,
Right.
May I interrupt? Fritz, would you come get Anika? I don't think she's feeling well. She keeps pestering me.
Do people ever have their own interpreters? Is that ever
sometimes
something that
they happens? Do, and sometimes a family member will say they're willing to help interpret. We do use that resource, but with some caution. Sometimes it's just better to have an objective person that will just translate and not try to, you know, interpret or sway or, I know from spending a lot of time meeting especially older individuals in the field, a lot of times a younger, you know, the middle-aged daughter would be there also and would be, or a spouse sometimes, and you'd be talking directly to the referee or the client, but the other person would keep saying, now mom, what you need, mom, you know, and so it's a little bit like that where you want to make sure they're just getting the words in the language and not changing it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what Bob alluded to as well.
Mm-hmm.
We have, go ahead.
Another thought that I had too, as far as reaching out to Native American, I think there is a cultural mistrust of mainstream agencies in general, but there's another added difficulty too, as far as just simple geography. Most of the two main reservations here in the state are located in remote areas, and even though Candy and John Smith have done some good work in that area so that we do have a presence there, I think that does compound the problem as far as accessibility. But one thing that did surprise me in putting the figures together is that actually we do serve younger Native Americans fairly well. I was surprised to see, I think it was 26 people in the VR track served this last year. And that is out of proportion to the statistics for the state. I was pleased to see that. When I looked at the same figures compared with the older blind population, where I expected that there should be more, because especially with higher incidences of glaucoma and diabetes in the Native American population, that wasn't the case. It was much, much, much lower. And so I think there's a difficulty there in reaching the older population. But the younger population does seem to be accessing services, and we are working with them. Many of them are, in fact, have active IPEs and have been in the center.
Thank you, Bob. Also, we haven't talked at all about the African American population yet. Same thing kind of holds there. The percentage in the state is 4%, and the percentage of people that we serve in the voc rehab track, that we served during this past year, I should say, there were 48, which is 6.5%. And I think this really gets to the fact that we have counselors who have a localized geographic area. They do a really good job of getting to, you know, speaking to schools, speaking to senior centers or churches, any group that will ask one of our folks to come. We speak to lots of organizations and, you know, our staff are kind of out there and in the community, and I think they do a really good job of that. We can always do better, but we certainly work at that.
I would think that with the Native Americans, I mean, they're isolated, but yet they're concentrated. So, you know, you can go out there and you know, have a talk or, you know, just be more visible when you do go out there. And,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what we are doing. That's why the numbers in transition has increased.
But we could be doing better with the older population, for sure.
I would say this is one of those topics that it's never something you've just, okay, we've got that one done. Good job. Cross it off the list of things we have to pay attention to. We always need to be conscious of serving people in an equitable manner and making sure that we get out to or make our presence known to as many people from as many different kinds of groupings as we can.
And I would imagine every state has these same issues, and when you get together with this different state directors, and this would be stuff that information is shared and or not as much as you would want shared.
We probably could have more, you know, and I think, I'm sure some states do better or worse at this, you know, if I know, you know, if you have an attitude that it's just, you know, I don't need to really worry about that group, whatever that group is, or if you're really attentive to just federal regulations and okay, I need to get do this and that, or if you really are consciously care about getting your word out to all the people that need to hear about it, and I think there are agencies in all of those categories, so. But yeah, we definitely address diversity and making sure that we meet the needs of people. There's also a part of the Voc Rehab Act that helps to encourage people, whether they're disabled or not, to go into the field of vocational rehabilitation. There are grants to universities to promote this, and they have some grants and efforts that are especially for students from non-Caucasian backgrounds to get involved in voc rehab as a career. There, of course, in Nebraska, we don't have a university that has a voc rehab program, and so we haven't really seen that here, but I'm proud of our diverse workforce. It's really quite good for Nebraska, I would say, both in terms of racial and ethnic background as well as multiple disabilities.
Do we know the closest state or similar state that gets this, the state legislature appropriates older blind dollars?
Iowa.
So they, you know, so what they, their, how they outreach to older blind, you know, might be, you know, it's a somewhat similar state, but it's, do you know how much money they get from the state for older blind?
Is it, I think it's 300,000.
I think it's on.
Yeah, that sounds right. Maybe a little more.
It would be interesting to, you know, find out from other states how they stack up in their serving of multiple disability and racial and ethnic groups.
Since Nebraska is so overwhelmingly, you know, white,
right?
But the older blind is obviously, you know, we have a large number of older Nebraskans. I mean, our demographics, we have one of the oldest states in the country, that you know, just thinking of arguments to be made to the legislature to give us more money for older blind, and you know, I think all those statistics are helpful, and with Iowa next door, that I know in talking to the senators, the fact that Iowa had a commission, when we were talking to them about, you know, the commission concept, that, you know, it helped,
right?
It's, you know, Iowa's not Massachusetts. I mean, that's going to have very little impact on their thoughts. But Iowa's, you know, this is our neighbor and gets more of their attention.
That's right. Bob.
I have another thought, too. In terms of outreach to specific populations, that is one thing that I think has changed over the last 10 years or so. Is that we have given more attention to people that have specific needs, more so than before, in the sense that we've added staff with the purpose of bringing that expertise in, to the agency and incorporating it in the way we provide services. In 2000, we added a part-time diabetic consultant. Mary Davis was doing that really for some time in her capacity as department resource person well before then, but in 2000 that became official. That is her job. I should say alternative diabetic skills counselor. And of course, Cheryl Pop has brought a dimension of expertise and knowledge to the agency that we simply didn't have before. So I think that's another area where we have seen more sensitivity, more attention paid to providing quality services for people with specific service needs. Same thing with supported employment. I think most of the offices now are comfortable with serving people with significant secondary disabilities, whereas that wasn't always true. So I think, I do remember too, being at a meeting in which it was said to a presenter from outside the